Warning.
The following contains mature subject matter and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Better get the bleep button ready for him.
Bleep. Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
Coming to you live from the Chili Pepper Podcasting Studios in Denver, Colorado.
Sunshine State. Denver. Gorgeous.
It's The Legal Dispute. Politics, law, culture, and sports. To guide us through this week's hot topics, the hosts of The Legal Dispute. Two guys who aren't married, they just argue like it. It's Lenny and Paul.
Hey, everybody, hey, everybody.
I think we're common law.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. There could be a court case. So we're gonna jump into this thing today, and I have a long introduction into this, if Lenny will allow me. But so, as some of you know, I think we have two listeners that don't live in the state of Colorado. We are from the state of Colorado. So when the Boulder Table Mesa King Super shooting this week happened, it hit close to home. Leonard and I, you know, our background, you know, besides this show, our friendship, you know, goes back 40 years at this point, I think. And so the reason that Leonard and I have, Andre calls it chemistry. I just call it a bond. I mean, it's is because we grew up kind of the same way. We both come from working class families. We both worked to support ourselves to get through college, and you know, we grew up together, so we had similar experiences, and we've kind of grown up along the way. Our politics haven't always been the same, but our politics also haven't always been that far off. There's certain issues that we definitely do not agree on, but there's other issues that we do. I tell all you guys that because, you know, we had a Tuesday call this week. We have one every week where we talk about what we're going to discuss this week on the podcast. And, you know, Leonard got on the call and Leonard goes, there's only one thing that we're going to discuss this week. And I was just nodding my head because he's right. I mean, there was only one thing for us to discuss this week. And so, you know, when this tragedy in Boulder occurred, it brings up a lot of emotions. It brings up a lot of feelings. It brings up a lot of anger. It brings up a lot of concern. And you know, one of the things that I told Leonard on the call on Tuesday is my frustration level is this. And to me, this is not a Republican Democrat issue. This is a common, I wish that we had common sense politicians that truly cared about the people that they represent. This is why this is going to be so long. So the Columbine shooting took place in 1999. It was horrible. It was everywhere. I remember sitting at home watching 9 News that night and literally crying on the couch because they were showing these young people that had all perished that day at the hands of these two kids. Within 2, 3, 4 days after that, we had Al Gore on the steps of a movie theater here in town, and gun control, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and thoughts and prayers and everything else. Well, since then, we have had the STEM school shooting, the Aurora massacre in the movie theater. We've now had the Boulder shooting, and those are just Colorado events, not to mention Vegas, San Bernardino, El Paso,
Sandy Hook.
Thank you. So, I mean, and the sad part is there's ones I don't remember. So, you know, my frustration comes out that I just genuinely don't believe that we have any politicians out there that have any guts to sit down and say, this is a problem and this is how, and I'll say this before I turn it over to Leonard. Here's what I think is the fundamental issue is if you're on the right and you hear gun control or anything, it automatically becomes an amendment to issue, and they're going to take away our guns and we're never going to see them again. And if you hear a liberal say it, they frame it up as gun control, and immediately, okay, well, all those guys want everyone to be armed and everyone wants to. This is where I get crazy with politics, because there is no middle ground. And my wish, my hope, and yes, send thoughts and prayers, Boulder Strong, and all these things that, you know, now have become themes around these shootings, which is just sick in and of itself, that, you know, there's going to be T-shirts out there that say Boulder Strong on them, and it makes my skin crawl. What I wish that a politicians or the group of politicians would have the guts to do is sit in a room, and Andre and I were just talking about this, away from the Senate floor, away from TV cameras, away from social media, but sit in a room and say, let's talk about one thing first. Just one item, not the whole thing. Not overwhelm everyone with politics. Let's just talk about one thing. Let's just talk about background checks. And take background checks, for instance, and say, okay, we need to figure out how it is that in the background system, in the national system, I think it's called NICS, and how it is that within that national database of people that we have, how do we start incorporating mental health care into the background check system? And then come back and find a resolve for that, whatever that is. And I don't know what it is. I'm sure there's legalities involved. I'm sure there's doctors that don't want to report on people, whatever it is. But that has to be solved. The second thing is then come back and say, okay, now let's talk about accessories. Now let's talk about bumper stocks. Now let's talk about 30-round banana clips. Now let's talk about 30-round Glock clips. Now let's talk about these things that make a weapon a super weapon, you know, something that makes it easier. And all of a sudden, you start to pair, you just start pulling this onion back. But the problem is that our politicians today, they don't know how to do it. They're not mature enough to do it. Our politicians are pansies, and they have been for 25 years. Because you think about it, Columbine was almost 25 years ago, and they've done nothing on both sides of the table to help with any of these issues. And it's disgusting to me. It is absolutely effing disgusting to me, because Aurora shooting could have been avoided. This shooting could have been avoided. El Paso could have been avoided. San Bernardino, I don't think it could have. I think they were terrorists. But you could start realize that the kid at Sandy Hook could have been avoided for sure. But they don't do anything. And so that's why, you know, and sure enough, and guys, here's the sick part. We're 6 days. I think we're 6 days since the shooting today. If I remember correctly, it was Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock. So we're 6 days. It's not on the front page of any of the news stations. It's not on the second. I looked this morning. It wasn't on a page on Fox or on CNN, either one of them. We've become numb as a country to these things that happen, and that's a sickness that you can't fix that. You can't fix that as a country. And we have no one in politics that has the guts to sit down and try to find a rational way to protect our people. Not our kids now, our people. It should be our kids, but now it's our people. Now it's a grocery store on a Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Holy shit. I mean, you got movie theaters, a sanctuary, grocery stores, a sanctuary, schools, a sanctuary. These are all places that you shouldn't have to think twice about going to be safe. And they've been attacked. And again, this is just here. So Jesus Christ, you start looking at, and you look at the Vegas shooting, it's a concert hall. You look at El Paso, it was a Walmart. I mean, this is, but we have no one, none of our leaders have a plan, have the guts, the intestinal fortitude to try to figure out a pragmatic way to discuss this problem without it being liberal versus conservative. And it's not. It's not a liberal versus conservative problem. This is an American citizen's problem. So that's my long introduction into this call. And Lenny, thank you for letting me do that. But it makes me sick, dude. It makes me absolutely effing sick.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you just said. We've had this conversation plenty of time. And, you know, like you said, I think I'm coming numb to it. And that's the sad part about it. I realized, and I think I said this Tuesday, I'm now the belief that in my lifetime, I will never see a change. I think in my lifetime, I will never see this issue be addressed properly. And that's sad to me, because you know, Adriana was 2 years old when Columbine happened. So Adriana's grew up now in a society where this is now expected. Where's the next one going to be? Not is there going to be a next one, but where's the next one going to happen at? My life, I grew up kind of in a weird way around gun violence for one way or another. You know, my dad was shot when he was 15, three times on Christmas Eve. Now, he was shot with a 22 and he was with friends. If that person had an AR-15 or even what this kid had in the King Supers, not only would my dad have not made it, which means I wouldn't exist. I'm not sure what that was. Maybe that was my dad saluting me from above. But not only would my dad have not made it, because he was shot three times, if that guy had a semi-automatic with, you know, 23 rounds or whatever they have now, 33 rounds, there's no way my dad would have made it. Okay. There's no way probably his friends would have made it that were with him that day. So, you know, when I was 7 years old, I lost one of my best friends who went to his neighbor's house to see his friend, his neighbor, and the neighbor pulled out his dad's gun to show one of my best friend, David Lucero, and David was shot in the head and died. And I remember going to a T-ball game and them canceling it because they announced that there, and I heard one of my best friends got shot in the head and was killed. You know, a good friend of mine growing up who used to always, we joked that we were kind of like cousins, and we were kind of like cousins for years, was shot and killed with a gun when he was, I think we were 17. And then I had a friend who was my boss for many years, who was in an Albertson store in 1995, who was working, he was the managing an Albertson store here in Colorado, and a guy came in and shot him and was shot at the wife, his wife. He came in to kill his wife, and my friend happened to jump in the middle. He was shot, and then the guy shot a Jefferson County sheriff outside the store, and they finally took the guy in. That guy did not have a semi-automatic AR-15. If he would have, there would have been a lot more people killed than two people that day in the store. Now, two people's enough, especially Dan Swazel, who is a good friend of mine and good guy. You know, he didn't deserve to die that day. He went into his store, his job, thinking it was going to be another day, and he ends up, you know, getting shot and killed. But I just look at, you know, the guns that were used during some of these shootings and thought how it could have been a lot worse. But now we're, you know, the first time I've seen this mass killing, the mass shootings like this in our background was Columbine. Another thing.
But even Columbine, they didn't have AR-15s.
Didn't they have an AKA?
I thought they had handguns and shotguns. And
I thought they had a semi-automatic.
They had a semi-automatic. Andre,
did they? Yeah.
It
was like a sawed-off like Uzi.
Is that what it was like, an Uzi? Yeah, it was.
That's what Mallory's mom, I thought, described it as.
Yeah,
and, you know, for years I coached girls basketball and girls softball. And for years, I didn't know this, but we were at a tournament when we were younger, or when I was coaching. And one of these girls I coached since she was in the third grade, a great girl, good athlete. And I said, you know, I want to talk to parents today, but I didn't see your mom here. And she says, well, it's near April 20th, so she won't show up.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, well, because of Columbine. I knew her mom was a teacher, but I didn't realize her mom was at Columbine. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, would you? And then I started putting it together. And then I asked good friends of theirs. I said, man, I didn't know, you know, Mallory's mom was at Columbine. And they said she was the one that called 911. If you listen to the tapes, she's the one under the desk in the library who's calling 911. So I went back and I actually went and watched the videos and the tapes and the interviews of her. And so I knew this lady for 10 years and I knew she was kind of soft-spoken, but she was going through things mentally during the month of April that I can't imagine. And she was back teaching again. I don't know how she could ever step in a classroom, but listening to the tapes of her calling 911, hearing the guys pulling out while she's on there and shooting people, while she's on the phone and her crying, I have a newborn, who was Mallory, who I was coaching, saying, please come and save us because I have a newborn now. I have three kids. One's a newborn. Mallory, who was 2 years old at the time. So it's, and then me and you, Paul, happened to be in Vegas the night that shooting happened in Vegas over at the Mandalay Bay. And so we drove by the, we tell the story, we drove by the hotel the next day and saw the window blown out. And it was one of the most eerie feelings I've ever felt in my life, because it was just like, oh my God, this is where it all happened. And we've talked about it.
Below us, below that window, was still 53 bodies that were laying there.
Right.
And here we are going to the airport to go home. I mean, it was...
It's just... I'm just disappointed that, like you are, that, you know, I think when it comes to reasonable people, I think most of America that are in the middle, not Democrats, not Republicans, but just people in the middle, I think we all agree on plans, on little things that can help. But I think you're right. Politicians get there and it becomes political now. It is, you know, the Democrats saying, we got to act now. We got to do everything now. And it's the Republicans like Ted Cruz that stands up there and goes, we can't publicize this. You know, we can't make this
We can't politicize this.
Right. We can't make this an issue now. Well, when do you? When do you do it? So it's the politicians, to me, that are blowing it. And when we had our talk Tuesday, I went back and I was looking at what groups like the NRA pay to these politicians. And it totally makes sense, right? My dad always used to say, you don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Right.
And these guys, once you get in and once you start getting donations of $2, $3 million, $4 million, $13 million for some senators from one group, you are not going to go against that group. You're just not.
But that's what makes me sick to my stomach. So here I am, a politician. And again, I don't even want to use names because it doesn't matter.
Right.
You're putting a price on safety. You are putting a price on human lives. And I mean, that, just think about that. That's just sick.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sick. And how we can't, and look, you know, nobody in this room is dumb. You know, I mean, Andre and Aji and Leonard and myself, I mean, we're all pretty educated people. The NRA supports the right. I mean, that's where they sit. I don't even know.
They do give some to the Democrats.
I'm sure they do. But yeah, a majority of their money ends up on the right because it becomes a platform for the Republican Party. But at what point does one of those politicians, and it has to be a politician from the right, that can, and I was just telling Andre that if they would, again, take the cameras off. Ted Cruz wants to be on TV. Ted Cruz wants everyone to know, oh, well, Ted Cruz has said, no, we're not doing it. Ted Cruz is a fucking idiot. Mm. So, you know, we need a real politician on the right to say, you know what, guys, this isn't for the cameras. This isn't for anything. This is for the United States of America. I want to broach this subject. And it has to stay inside of a room. And I know everything that I'm asking for is impossible right now. I know it is. But it has to stay inside of a room. And again, that's why I keep saying you can't go after the AR-15. You can't go after the gun. I'm saying it today. Because that is the subject that automatically goes to, they want to take all of our guns away. So you start with something else.
But they tried. They had the
Brady Bill.
They also the background check.
They still have the background check. The problem is the background check doesn't go far enough, Len. The background check.
I thought they got rid of it a few years ago.
No. It's always been in place. But the problem is that it only checks for felonious acts. And so I think it goes into military if you are dishonorably discharged. I can't remember all of it, but that's what it does. It doesn't tie in mental health. There is no way on a background check for a doctor.
No, the problem you have is HIPAA, right?
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying rational minds have to come together on this.
I agree with you. They've got to change the HIPAA law.
They do. They have to change the HIPAA law that if a person is a threat to themselves, which is bad enough, or others, which is unforgivable.
They should go on a list.
They should go on the list. Right. Immediately go on the Knicks list, and they cannot walk in and purchase a gun. The Aurora gun shooter was under mental health care. This kid in Arvada was under mental health care. The kid at Sandy Hook, under mental health care. And granted, he stole the guns out of his mom's safe. But regardless.
The kid at in Florida.
No, that's right.
He had issues, yes, but I don't.
Parkland.
Right. I don't know if the parents ever.
I don't know.
Ever got him treatment, but I know they complained about his well-being.
But add the step. But add the step.
It'll never happen. Not in our lifetime.
And if that's not going to happen, then guess what? Nothing else matters. Because if you're a mentally ill person and you're deranged enough and you're paranoid enough that you're going to go in and you're going to kill people, then it's not, if the AR-15 ban it, it won't matter. Because this person's going to set a bomb. This person's going to go in there with 3 handguns. This person's going to go in there with, they have a mission. And we have to start with that side of the menu and get that right. And then all of a sudden you can get Americans to say, okay, well, we did that and look what happened. Now maybe we can start biting more of this menu. But if we can't even get that far.
I remember when we were kids, we were taught a few things. Well, if you're ever caught on fire, you stop, drop, and roll, right? If there was a tornado, you got under your desk at school.
Mm-hmm.
And
or stood in the doorway.
Yeah. Or the other thing was early on in the early 70s, and you know, if there was a nuclear attack or we were being invaded, what to do? And remember those.
Yeah, grab your ankles.
And then we watched Red Dawn, and I was like, it's right. Going to happen in Colorado.
Yeah.
We're screwed. I mean, that should have been, right, mean, that was in Colorado Dublin. Springs, right? And then War Games, they were Cheyenne Mountain, NORAD. NORAD. But now, like, Adriana, you guys are taught.
Well, I was talking about this with one of my friends who lives up in Boulder, that now she's afraid to go to grocery stores and everything. She feels like she has to look for the exit. I was like, I felt like right when we got into elementary school, high school, everything, they always taught us, look for the exits. What do you do when the gun person comes in? Like once a month, we had one of those trainings. It's something that we're like programmed to know. If you're in a situation, what do you do? I know after the Aurora shooting, I was like, if I'm in a theater, what do I do? Do I drop down? Like, how do I hide? Now you have to think about it in a grocery store.
No, but it's sick. It's sick that we have to, and I remember, you know, my kids are 18 and, or excuse me, 19 and 16. And I remember getting the first, I don't know, parent memo, you know, home that said, oh, we're going to be, you know, teaching the kids today if an active shooter is on. And I'm like, what the fuck? My kids go to, I mean, what? And then I'm thinking to myself, you have to do this. You have to do this. I remember at work and having active shooter, they never tried to call them drills because they never.
Training.
Yeah, they would always try and call it something human resource friendly. And we would always joke about it. We'd be like, look, slowest man loses. I mean, that's what's going to. But, you know, but they taught in the office building. Here's what you want to do. Leave your cell phone, leave everything, you know, and, you know, head to your nearest exit. Here's the parking. Here's where you want to gather in the parking lot so that we can account for people and all this other stuff. I was just like, what the hell has the world come to?
We were taught how to, like, barricade the doors and everything. Even in college, there was a couple times because in Boulder, we had that scare one time where a guy had a machete on campus. And then they thought there was an active shooter. But I don't know if there ever really was. But
right. He
said, what you have to do if you're in a like big lecture hall, how to like avoid it and everything.
So, Paul, you brought up some very interesting points before we got started. By the way, you're listening to The Legal Dispute with Lenny and Paul. Thanks for tuning in. Paul, you mentioned something that seems to make a lot of sense. Just adjust the HIPAA laws. And I'm with you. And I'm with Lenny. That's seemingly the most obvious thing you need to adjust. But just before we got started, you brought up something that I hadn't thought of. The lawsuits that could potentially be brought onto doctors.
Mm-hmm. On top of the fact that 25% of America is under some form of mental health treatment.
Here's the real argument. I know where you're going with this, Andre. Sorry to interrupt. But the big problem, the big argument that doctors and psychiatrists and so forth have is, if you allow us to make a list, people are smart enough, they won't go in to get treatment. And so what you do is, now that they know you're going to be put on this list and that people have access to this list, they'll stop coming in to get treatment, and that will make it even worse because they're not even getting treatment or even medication that they need because they don't want to be put on this list. And so I've heard that argument before. It's not so much the doctors are like, we're going to get sued or so much. They're more worried like, hey, we're going to lose half our patients because our patients are going to be like, I'm not going in there if you're going to release my name. I don't want my name released on a list. Hey, I need some psychological help, but I don't want to be put on that list.
Yeah, but if you're a harm, if the doctor says you are at harm for yourself or for others, it's not just the guy that's going in because he's depressed. It's not the person that's just going in to deal with anxiety. It's not the person that's going in because they're afraid of midgets. This is the person that is going in that has conversations that a trained medical professional deems could be harmful to himself, herself, or others.
I understand that, but what their argument is those people won't come in to get treatment if they know they're going to be put on a list and be marked. So now you're marked as being crazy, as a lunatic.
I also see more of an issue being, okay, you were seeking treatment. Let's say you got better, but you were still put on a list 5 years ago. You weren't taken off. Now you can't buy a gun. Is that an infringement upon one's rights? It's a tricky spider's web. There's no doubt.
Well, here's the bottom line, though, and I think me and Paul are probably thinking the same thing, is for God's sakes, we put something on the moon that took pictures that looked like we were right there. How we're smart enough that we can figure this out. We can figure out alternatives to all these things. Every question has an answer. I mean, most people who are very successful in business will tell you every question, every concern has an answer. And so there's people that are smart enough to sit down, you know, that the head of psychology at Harvard and so forth can sit down and say, how can we do this and still get people who are cured, who maybe there's different levels. There's a red level. There's a yellow level.
That's exactly right.
I mean, there's things that they can work around to protect them. And we just got to figure it out. Like Paul said, you got to sit down in a room and lock the door and say, we're not coming out of here until we figure out how
and
to
no this. TV cameras, no social media, nothing. Yeah. Just rational human beings sitting in a room saying we have a national crisis.
Right.
And again, don't take, what do they always say? To eat an elephant, you start just taking small bites. So just like
that's
I said,
disgusting,
just take one, just take one part of the problem, and then move on to the next part, and then move on to the next part. And God, I just believe that you would be able to find progress or be able to see progress. But these guys can't even figure that out because they immediately go to, they want to take all my guns.
Right.
No. Using your hypothetical, taking small part of the elephant, you take a little bit at a time. You've got the one side, the left side, that says, no, we want half the elephant right now, right? And then you've got the other side, the right side, that says, if you let them eat the small part, they're going to want the whole elephant later. So you can't have them have a small part of it because then they're going to want the big part and then the big part, and true, then we won't have any elephant left.
True.
So you got one side saying we want half the elephant now, and you got the other side that says don't give a dime because they'll take a dollar.
I also think one of the problems, and to your point, Paul, this is strictly an American problem. You go around the world, this is a problem that is in this country. And I think that makes us as Americans less likely to actually address it. But one of the problems is Americans have a fetish with guns. People like the Lauren Boberts of the world who
I call bull crap.
And I consider her crazy because she considers the right for her guns to be akin to the right to have a life. And Paul, I know that you dismiss her and you say that, oh, she's not a part of the solution. She's not a part of the problem. She's out of there. She's a leader. And there's more like her. And as long as you have these people fetishizing guns to the point where it's this or death, how do you even approach it? I think you have to vote out these people who are so radical to hold on to an inanimate object more so than they would hold on to the life of their neighbor.
My point with Lauren Boebert, and as we were talking about before, Ons, is that, again, She's been in office for 4 months.
Right.
This problem started. I don't even say started. This it became frontline head 25 years ago. So you know, there's always going to be a Lauren Boebert. There's always going to be an AOC. There's always going to be these people. They always there. My frustration is, again, Al Gore stood on the steps. By the way, 2 miles from here, 2 miles from where we're sitting right now, said, thoughts and prayers. We're going to go back and we're going to do our job in Washington and we're going to fix this problem and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. 25 years later, and I'm not blaming Al Gore, by the way. He's just the guy who was vice president
just
at the time.
Just one of them, yeah.
Right, but he's just the guy who was vice president at the time. It's 25 years later. Nothing has changed. The Brady Bill was pre him.
Yeah.
Was that a Clinton deal, Len?
No, the Brady Bill?
Yeah.
No, it was a Reagan. It was at the end of the Reagan administration.
Oh, because Reagan got shot, right?
Yeah. And okay. I think Clinton signed it into law, but it started under the Reagan administration.
And what happened to it? It just went away?
It ran out and then it was not renewed.
And a lot of you start chipping away at stuff too. And they started chipping away at the Brady Bill a little bit. And then it becomes really ineffective in its own way. But it's frustrating because, you know, I look back at, as a lawyer, you know, some of the top cases you learn about when you're going through law school, you know, the Pinto, when, you know, you would crash into the back of a Pinto, it would blow up. So Ford, who made the Pinto,
nice job there, Henry. Ford design.
Ford that said either we can recall these cars or we could just pay the lawsuit. And they did a budget analysis and then basically said, no, let's keep the cars out there. It costs us more to bring these cars in and keep selling them than it would.
Eventually, it costs us less to pay for the lawsuits than it does to recall the vehicle.
Eventually, the government got involved and said, you can't do this.
60 Minutes got involved.
Yeah. And you say, you can't do this. And then you put legislation out there to make it almost impossible for manufacturers to do this. Tobacco, when we, you know, for years people were saying tobacco's killing you. But tobacco was giving so much money to the politicians, nothing was done about it. Eventually what happened is
60 Minutes.
It became such an issue that they started regulating it more. They started making it harder to buy cigarettes. You now had ID. I mean, my dad used to send me to 7-Eleven down the street and say, and I had a note that said, allow my son to buy Benson Hedges gold.
Yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden you had to have an ID. All of a sudden they became locked in the stores in behind the glass. All of a sudden the tax on it became so outrageous, nobody could afford to buy cigarettes anymore. And so they just kept, eventually the government's involvement helped turn around people from smoking, except if you go to Europe, everybody smokes. But that's democracy kind of working in that it's when you have issues, when you have faulty things out there, you have FDA coming in, you can't sell this drug anymore because it's killing people, right? You have FDA coming in and saying you can't sell this type of food because and we have to shut it down because it's selling whatever that is. You have things, but for guns, they don't touch. And I don't understand. I just can never understand why not. And I'm not one. I know people who know me know I'm pretty liberal, but I think people should own guns if they're responsible people and they have rights to own guns. I don't think people need an AR-15. I don't think people need to go out there and have weapons that we use in war as fun, you know, to go target practicing.
Sport shooting.
I just don't.
What the hell does that mean?
I do think my dad always carried a gun. He was shot 3 times when he was a kid. God bless him if he wanted to carry. And, you know, eventually when he passed away, I got one of his guns. It's a revolver. And so I'm fine with that. But I just never understood, like Andre say, just this love, this fascination of owning as much power of a gun that you possibly could have.
Well, and let me break a couple of liberal hearts here. The truth is, even if you were able to make AR-15s, all assault rifles, illegal, there's too many now in the world to ever get rid of them. And if you take them and say they're illegal, they're just going to have a black market that will never go away.
Well, it's just like drugs, though, right? Drugs are illegal for the most part. And, you know, it never goes away. But there's punishment. The people that want to be legal and don't want to go to prison, they stay away from heroin, trafficking heroin and doing this stuff. So, yeah, you're right. It goes to a black market. It goes underground. But still, you can control a little bit. The guy that... This is the scary part about Boulder, right? They outlawed and made it so that you had a waiting period in Boulder to buy a gun. Like 3 days or 4 days?
10 days.
Ten days before he bought his gun. The judge in Boulder, after NRA filed a lawsuit against the city of Boulder saying you can't do this, the judge in Boulder said the NRA is right, and he got rid of the law. So even when you, if you get legislatures in Boulder, the Boulder City Council, the Boulder mayor said, we're going to make this part of our own municipality. This is the rule we want the city of Boulder to follow. You had a Boulder County judge say, no, you can't, because the NRA came in and said, you can't. And so there's just so many problems with this all. And like I said, unfortunately, it saddens me to think that I will never see a solution to this in my lifetime. I've come to the point where I'm 52 years old and I'm 53 now.
Who's counting?
Don't add that here. Come on,
one,
we were in
two,
a pandemic.
Three,
I just don't see it happening. It's sad. I feel bad for my kids and my future grandkids, that they're going to have this issue, and my grandkids are going to be like, well, I can't go here without, you know, wearing a vest,
right,
or something. I want to go see a movie, but my parents won't.
That guy's out with the anti-aircraft gun this weekend, right, again. No, I mean, and I didn't want to interrupt you because you're on a good thought. The difference between smoking and guns, the difference between Pintos and guns, is the Constitution. And because we have a Second Amendment that says you have a right to bear arms, and Len, I'm not defending the Second Amendment, and I'm just saying that's the difference between guns and other products that have been banned or taxed or, you know, whatever it is. Hey, I'll tell you what, you know, and you just brought that up, and I didn't even think about it. You know, put a sin tax on an AR-15. Put a sin tax on it. I mean, why not?
Put a tax on it. But also, my wife thought of this, or at least maybe she heard it from somebody. You want an AR-15, you've got to have a license. You pay that extra tax. And by the way, you have to have insurance on it. Now, vehicles, it's harder for someone to drive a car than it is to get a gun. Hmm. Not only is it harder, but it also is more costly because you have to have insurance. You have to pay tax on that license plates every year, and you have to make sure that every so often you have to go and get re-registered again. So, but in a gun, I buy it once. I don't have to have it licensed. I don't have to, I mean, I guess they register it, but I don't pay a tax every year on that registration like I do on my car. So I mean, there's things that can help.
You can't touch it, Len. Again, it's in the amendment. That's why.
But the Second Amendment. What I was going to say, the Second Amendment is so misquoted.
Doesn't matter.
It's so misused.
But Leonard, it's up for interpretation. Any one of the amendments is, and you're going to find an attorney on either side. And that's why I keep coming back to the point that until we have just common sense, frickin' politicians that can sit around a table like mature adults and say, guys, We're going to have to take bites. We're going to have to peel this onion back. But, you know, we can't start with the gun, because the day you start with the gun, it's dead. It's done. So what are the things that lead up to it? And what are some of the things that are commonalities in these cases that we can use to be able to go back and try to prevent some of these things from happening again? But the day that you go after the gun, it's dead. It is dead, and that is where there will be an uproaring, and a Democrat doesn't want to be the person to say that they're against it, and a Republican wants to be the person that says, oh my God, I protected your gun rights.
And I think the only hope I have is I think the younger generation gets it a little bit better than our generation.
Till they get paid. No, I'm dead serious. Think about it. You guys, again, this is not 25 years ago. We were the younger generation.
He keeps adding 2 years to that, and it's making me feel old.
All right, so 23 years ago. But think about it, Len. We were the younger generation. We were in our 30s. So we were, it was our kin. It was our folk that were standing there. They didn't do anything. And the generation after that, they didn't do anything. So what the hell makes you think that that Adriana's friends are going to do anything? I mean, and it's not that I don't believe. Well, no, it is that I don't believe. I've never seen a generation that has the guts politically to sit down and say, here's one of the things that I want to stand. When's the last time that you ever, ever think about this? And I want you to truly answer this. A common sense solution to gun control. Not a ban. Not guns for everybody, but a common sense solution.
Well, I mean, I hear it at night where they said, let's start with a background check. That doesn't go anywhere in the Senate right now. I mean, it's dead, like you said, dead on arrival.
But why?
I don't know. I don't understand why background checks is such a problem. If you just, like you mentioned, start somewhere, start with the background check. It, for some reason, a group of people freeze up like, can't let them do that. And I don't understand the rationale. I've heard people talk about,
if you were the NRA, you'd think you would support it. You would think that the NRA, because you would say,
that's a really
I
good
want
point.
Responsible gun ownership. That's what they talk about all the time.
But they don't. They just want their guns out their door. I mean, a gun sold, even if it's to a crazy person, is a gun sold. I think that's, I mean, we have come such in a way that businesses don't have, you know, ethics, most of them. It's all about capitalization of our democracy. And look, if I can sell, you know, if I sell 30, like Andre said, if I have 100 people in a store and 45 of them would not pass a background check because they might be mentally unstable. Didn't you say 45%?
Anxiety pills, whatever.
They would not pass. So I can only sell 55 guns instead of 85 guns. Then why would I be for that bill? I mean, that's what it comes down to, doesn't it? I mean, it comes down to, I instead of making, you know, $30,000 today, I'm going to only make 15 because I can't sell to half of them because half of them are crazy.
I don't know. I don't know the math on it. I mean, I sold them for years. I don't know how much money the gun manufacturers have in play on these things. I really don't.
I think you told me once that there's the margins in the gun margins manufacturing are very small.
They're
right?
Very narrow. They're very narrow. Which so I can't imagine. And then plus,
but it's big dollars, Paul. Because they're paying big dollars for the legislatures to touch it.
I don't know how much they're. That's what I'm saying. Look, you guys, most of the gun manufacturers over the last 20 years have gone bankrupt. And you know,
well, and the NRA is the weakest it's ever been,
and they brought back. So it's not like they've got money just falling out of their pockets.
The NRA, they said, is basically bankrupt right now.
Well, they've said
they've
had
a lot of problems in the last few months.
They've said that the state of New York basically was going to
Oliver North was if you got Oliver North,
yeah, that's your main guy. You're in trouble. But have you guys heard? And Paul, it's sad, but you're right that now the Boulder shooting is off the main page, second page, third page. You're lucky if you'll find anything about it. Have you guys heard about Denny Strong, who was 20 years old, the youngest victim of the shooting?
Yeah, the kid from Fairview High School.
So he was the one that wounded the shooter, Ahmad Al-Willi.
Oh, really?
Don't even say his name.
Well, the shooter. Okay, yeah. So here's what happened. Denny Strong, who, by the way, his dad came out and said he's a big gun supporter, and he said that he's sad that his son's death would have caused more conversation about gun control. Anyway, so he was standing at the Starbucks. He was not on duty, but he was employed there. As the shooting started, he had a hunting knife on him that he always carried. He attacked the shooter. He was the one that actually wounded him.
I had no idea.
I did not know that.
I didn't
so
read that.
Denny Strong was his name, Fairview High School. He died a hero. He caused the shooter to be severely wounded, and they said that if he wouldn't have acted as he did, many other people would have died. So there's a lot of other ancillary stories that are still happening.
6 degrees of separation again. So my son played 7-on-7 football for years, right? My son is 19 years old. Denny Strong was 20 years old. he played with like four or five kids that went to Fairview that were friends with Denny Strong. Yep. So the day of the shooting, Logan and I were talking, and Logan was like, "Dad, somebody named, you know, my buddies knew this guy, yep. and that's how that's why I knew who he was." But, you know, again, friends of friends knew who he was, and that's, you know, that's how close some of these things can hit to home, which is really startling.
I mean, I had to text all my friends up in Boulder absolutely. To make sure yeah, they were at Starbucks.
You're just a year or two outside of yeah. Boulder's campus.
My nephews live up there. Yeah, my nephews live right up there. I called my brother. I said, where are my nephews? And he goes, they're good.
I had people text me, like, yeah. you're not in Boulder, yeah. right?
I used to meet my weed dealer at that King Supers in Table Mesa back, allegedly.
Well, there's a lot of, by the way, in Boulder, there's a lot of weed dealers.
Yeah.
There used to be. Well, yeah.
They're pissed off that it went legal.
But anyway, Adriana was actually in Boulder the day before, right? Yep. Right meeting yeah. her friends that she went to see you with up there. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, we're real close to the whole issue on different levels.
What is it with Colorado springtime shootings?
I don't know.
What the hell? We have Aurora, you have Columbine, now you have this.
It is, you know what, and the thing is Colorado is an open carry state, right?
I don't think that's correct.
That doesn't stand for anything. I was talking to...
You can't walk around with a gun on your belt in Colorado.
You have to, with the permit.
It's a concealed carry.
Okay,
it's a concealed
carry. Okay,
there's a difference between open carry and concealed carry. It's a concealed carry.
I have a question for you, Len, because I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big gun owner. Mm-hmm. He has a concealed carry permit. Mm-hmm. He said that...
So does Mike Moe, by the way.
Oh, God. Now we're in trouble. But he said that if he was in that King Supers parking lot and somebody said there's a shooter, even though he has a right to carry a concealed weapon, he could not have acted as, quote, a vigilante.
Officer. Right.
Isn't that kind of stupid? Doesn't that say the Lauren Boberts of the world really have no point? Because if you have a gun, you can't go save people.
Look at the point. All I have to say is... You know, a lot of people say, well, if I was able to carry my gun, revolver, my semi-automatic, you know, I could have, you know, and that shooter would have came in, I could have protected myself and others. The last person shot was a police officer who had not only the training for 10 years, but had the police gear, his gun drawn, and he got killed. So now you want 20 other people in there shooting at each other? Who knows who you're shooting at that point in time? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the problem with that argument, and I hear this argument. Well, you know, if a shooter's in there and we're all allowed to carry, we're able to defend ourselves. What do you want to make this now? Because I'm telling you, if I'm allowed to carry and my family is in there, I am going to pull the gun, and I'm going to start firing at anybody that I think looks suspicious. And unfortunately, that might be people that weren't the active shooter to begin with. And now we've got mass casualties that are
Wild West.
Like the Wild West. I mean, we're at the OK Corral, you know, back in Arizona in the Doc Holliday days. I mean, I don't understand why we would want to be that society anymore. So if your friend is in the car and he hears this gun shooting, does police want that guy running in there with a gun at that point? Because guess what? That police officer that got shot, if he saw your friend first, he would have shot and killed him. And then maybe your friend was protecting somebody else. And now it's just a free-for-all. I don't think we want to go there at all. But
let's hope not.
But that's the argument that's being made for on some people that say you can't attack our gun rights because we have a right to protect themselves. And I get that. Someone breaks into my house, I have a gun, I have a right to protect myself. But if there's shooting in the store and I'm in the parking lot, I'm going to call 911. If my family's in there, I probably will run in.
You're going in.
But the police don't want me to. Every legal enforcement agency does not want me to run back in there. You know, there's a lot of talk, and Adriana showed me it to begin with. This guy from YouTube that's making money doing these YouTube videos happened to be there that day, runs in and is taking videos.
Yeah, I saw that.
Of this thing.
Then
he runs out the door and he's videotaping where the police officer is as the police officer is hiding behind a car. And the police officer is like, turn off your phone and get the hell out of here. And he's like, no, I have a right to be here. Well, How does this guy not know that they're the guy in the store doesn't have somebody outside the store saying, so you got a police coming in on this side and you got a police officer? I mean,
this is a whole other conversation. This is where the policeman should turn around and hit him in the head with the butt of his gun. I mean, but seriously, but you can't do that today because, oh my God, my rights were violated. Right. Get the fuck out of my way. I'm saving your life.
It is
dumbass.
A different, because now YouTube won't take it off. So this guy's going to make money and get
he's a fighter.
He was so awful too. He walked by people who were shot on the right, ground and didn't check them
and trying to save them
he was getting his mouth clicks to mouth. He has to get his clicks.
So Colorado. So just as a point of reference, and I want to get sent from 1982 to now. All right, as far as mass shootings go, Colorado is the fifth state. So California is first, Florida is second. California is first, by the way, by a lot. Florida is second, Texas is third, state of Washington is fourth, and then Colorado, which should make us all really nervous because
per capita.
Colorado, we think it's a disaster. In California, by the way, is beating us by almost double.
What is Vegas considered on there? Mass.
I don't know, maybe more than four or five.
And this is sad. When I got the news from my beloved aunt, she texted me, friend of the program, she texted me on Monday and said, did you hear about what happened? I heard ancillary things, but my first reaction was, how many dead? Right. If it's more than X, I guess I'll really care and turn on the radio. But right. I mean, it really.
Well, that's the society we become now.
It's sad.
It's just totally sad. Well, like how many. When they go, well, there might be six injured, and I was like, no, there's what kind of gun? I mean, that's your first thing. What kind of gun?
It's always the first question.
Yeah. If you had this type of gun, then there's more than six.
It starts at 10 and just goes up.
Can I give you some hope for the future, though? Because one thing that really saddens me is that you have this attitude that in my lifetime I will never see this, a change. But, well, first off, you're in the best shape of your life. Congratulations on that. So you're going to live 60 more years.
Why? Because he can outrun the other guy?
That's why I've been training.
Yeah. But Lenny, there are people who I think could champion this issue. Like Jason Crow, who is a representative in Congress from here in Colorado, former Marine. He is very much in favor of doing something, and who knows what that would mean. But
Representative Crow, I think he's turned out to be a great
guy.
Great representative. And what I mean by that, there's some, Diana DeGette, who go to Congress, in my view, to collect the check.
Cha-ching.
And he's been, I mean, he's only been in there for maybe 4-6 years at the most, and he stands out. But we hear this, this is what Paul was saying. We hear the same talk every time. And it's nothing against Crow because, I really like him. But come on, until I see a bill passed, I didn't know Juwan Howard coached him.
Anyway. Yeah.
So until I see a bill passed, it's just hard for me to believe it's going to happen.
I can see what you're saying too. Like, there was no change with Sandy Hook when little elementary school kids were shot at and killed. There was no change.
Obama cried.
Yeah.
I mean, he went on TV and cried about what happened at Sandy Hook. I mean, I can't imagine. I was thinking about this when we heard about Boulder. Can you imagine if you were somebody that your wife called, hey, I'm on my way home from work. Hey, and I told her, hey, stop by King Supers because I need something. Mm-hmm. And then she dies. Mm-hmm. Imagine what the survivors, some of those have to deal with. Imagine the last thing you did with your kid was get in an argument. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, they're dead or your parent. I just can't imagine what these people, the families of these victims go through. And it's not makes a difference because one was at a concert, one was at whatever. It's all the same. But at a grocery store, you just thought, you know, where the hell's my wife? Like, I'm starving, right? She said she would be home. And then you turned on the TV and you're like, you changed from being mad because they're not there to all of a sudden you're in panic mode. One of the scariest things, and then I'll leave my comments here. One of the saddest things I heard after the Boulder shooting on one of CNN or one of the channels, they talk to the detective or the police captain of Aurora Police, the police chief during Aurora shooting. And he said that when, after the shooting, that families were trying to come in to the theater to see if their family was one of the victims. Well, what happened is they had to put a police officer next to every body that was in there to save for evidence for the crime scene. And all these officers reported was cell phones going crazy on these deceased people. And it was family members calling to see if they made it to there. And the officers couldn't grab the phone. They couldn't answer the phone. They couldn't touch anything on these victims. But so your job as an officer is to stand next to a dead person who just got shot in a mass shooting, and their family is texting, calling, and going crazy. I can't imagine mentally as a police officer if I would ever get over that. Like, you know, you have a tough job as is. But can you imagine every time a phone would ring, it would send me back to when I was watching over this dead body. And when that cap, these are things you don't think about. You know, you hear about the massacre, you feel bad for the family, you see all this stuff, and you really don't think about this thing until you listen to those stories. And it's just, it tears you up, I mean, to think about that.
No, it's brutal. Yeah. So, guys, that's what we got for today. I think that was a great conversation, Lenny and Hodge and Andre. I don't think that there's, you know, really a reason to put a bow on this thing besides just to say our hearts and prayers go out as they have for 25 years. I pray to God that we get politicians that can grow a set that actually care about the people that they represent, and that they can start coming back with some sort of a plan as to how we can stop having these conversations. Legal Dispute with Lenny and Paul.